Most High, I come to you giving you thanks and praise for keeping me in sound body and mind. I ask you to forgive me for all my indiscretions, all that I have done and all that I will do. I ask you to open me up, use me as your vessel, let my voice be yours. Speak your mission through me, allow the listeners to open up and receive it the way you intended. No holds barred. Use me. I look at the news and I watch other people's nations formed over. While right out my window, it looked like death done warmed over.
At the turn of the century, late 1990s, early 2000s, I was a college graduate, just stepping into the adult world for the first time. And I was trying to define myself in three spaces. First and foremost, I was a human being. Second, I was a young man. I was a black man. And I wanted to be as honest as possible about those three distinct realities, how they converged, how they diverged, and how they affected me every single day of my life. I found it difficult to put into words how those three distinct realities intersected without making the reader confused. Today, 14, 15 years later, I'm talking to a young man around that same age. And so much has happened in the world since 1999, 2000. And I wanted to get a sense of where he is at this stage in his life, about to be a college graduate, and he seems very open to the possibilities in life. In 1999, I wanted to have a conversation about race in America and what had happened in the 40 years since the Civil Rights Movement. The world wasn't ready then. And in light of the events in Ferguson and New York City, perhaps the world is ready now. But I also want to find out, again, on those three distinct realities for this young man. How does he feel as a human being? How does he feel as a young man? And how does he feel as a black man in America at this time in history? Like the darkest of times, but I seen the brightest potential. I got the heart of a teacher, but still the mind of a hustler. I got that shit that when the spit is guaranteed to touch you, black ice clutch you, put you right in the verse. It's like first person, it's like you was right there. Today on Ubuntu Radio, I have my friend Gino here, who is one semester from graduating from my alma mater,
yep.
North Carolina State University, majoring in statistics.
Statistics.
Actually met I was trying to figure out what year did I coach you first. I coached a team that was just put together for the summer so the kids can keep playing. And actually, I remember we went to Atlanta?
Yeah, went to Atlanta.
It was hot as hell. Oh my God.
We were on turf fields and my feet were burning.
I remember my sneakers. I had Adidas sneakers. The soles burned off because we were playing Alpharetta or somebody. You were at these nice, it was a nice complex, a little stadium, but I remember they had to stop it in the middle of the game wet the turf because it was so damn hot.
I really loved that summer and playing with you. I remember sitting on the long bus ride and you were trying to give me knowledge. I was talking about girl problems. You were trying to give me, advice. And that meant a lot because I even remember writing essays later on. I don't remember what it was for, whether it was high school apps or college apps, but I was talking about heroes and you were one of them.
Get the hell out of here.
I'm telling the truth, not just because we're on radio. Talking about like role model type
people. Are you serious?
Yeah.
No, because I said this before we got on the air. One of the reasons I want to talk to you is I kind of see myself 20 years ago. I mean, not just the soccer and NC State connection, but that can't hurt. Mm. But it's the kind of stuff that I see you doing on Facebook. I mean, one of the reasons I've been trying to get you to talk to me for like, you're a senior. I've been trying to get you to talk to me for like 4 years now.
It's true.
4 years, true. But life is what it is. And obviously you had stuff you had to do. But recently I read a comment. What do you call it? A commentary, criticism? Not a criticism, but an analysis of a show called Legend of Korra.
Yeah.
Legend of Korra. So, I mean, I think it's probably at least 1,000 to 1,500 words. Or it's up there.
It was long.
About, and it's funny because my son and I, we were excited when Legend of Korra came out. Legend of Korra was a sequel to
The Last Airbender.
The Last Airbender, which if you have not seen that. First
one of the best shows.
I thought it was just some stupid Nickelodeon show for kids. But I mean, I've looked at enough TV and movies to say, top five
easy
television shows easy and movies epics I have ever seen.
It's a masterpiece.
The Last Airbender. The movie sucked ass. Sorry, M. Night Shyamalan. You could not live up to Well, the expectations were set so high.
They were set
so high.
You can't put something with that much depth into, like, what, an hour and a half, 2 hour movie.
I thought the movies, there was going to be sort of like a three-part something.
I think they were going to do that too, but it got such a bad reception that it failed. I think that's kind of what happened, and they just decided not to go along with it.
And it's sad. It was sad because, I sat down and I probably watched it. I watched it with my son. Mm-hmm. I know a friend of mine at work recommended to me something. Like, I had Netflix at the time, and I'm like, okay, I'll go watch it. And it's one of those things where I just binge watched.
Yeah.
On the weekend, then I got my son into it, and so we watched it together, and we talked about it, and he got into it. And then, when did Legend of Korra come out? Like 2 or 3 years ago?
I think it's 2 years ago. Maybe three. Three tops.
And we watched it Saturday afternoon. It was Saturday, like 11 o'clock. We watched it, but it was only 9 episodes, and I thought that was it. Like, that was, like, people were going, kind of like what you said, there was such a new world, a different world from the world that was created in Avatar, which is kind of epic in scale and sort of medieval meets this weird mix of technology. And I thought maybe people didn't make the transition over to Korra, so they stopped it. But then I'm reading your thing, I'm going, it continued?
It's 4 seasons.
Are you serious? I mean, what were you saying about the Legend of Korra? Just give people a little.
All right, so I guess if I could summarize it, I think I would still say maybe The Last Airbender is a better show, or maybe a show that I enjoyed more in theory, because...
I will, again, you're gonna say something about Legend of Korra, but I will go, and don't let this dissuade you, Legend of Last Airbender is better. Okay, much better. Keep going.
The Last Airbender, you know, it had a sense of wonder about it. It was novel, like, when have you seen a show like that before? But I feel like it was kind of like Lord of the Rings, where you have this classic hero, villain, epic proportions, epic scale. But Legend of Korra is a very intelligent, nuanced, intellectual show. I feel like it's that more so than The Last Airbender. So it depends on what you value in TV shows. It kind of deals with the human condition in a way that might be a little better than The Last Airbender. So I think, you know, most people that I agree with the most, they said, man, they're two complementary pieces of a great overarching story. You don't need to pit one against the other, but I think they're both masterpieces, and I think Legend of Korra is better than people think. It's at least on par with its prequel.
I will disagree with you, respectfully disagree with you there, but also one of the things that I had to mention in commenting below your stuff was that the fact is, and you mentioned this, that the Legend of Korra is dealing with more adult themes.
Yeah.
That you deal with, I didn't know that she was in a relationship with another woman in the show, like the Korra character, or that multiracial...
Yeah, I mean,
family.
There's a little nuances in, but like, they just sprinkle those things in, sort of like inter-nation or interracial relations, but The Last Airbender dealt with genocide and like this Imperial World War and things of that nature, but I think that Legend of Korra got into more of the grays, where you have people that aren't just like crazy dictators trying to rule everybody, but people with real philosophies and ideologies that make sense, that are radicalized, but still are grounded in understandable reason, fighting for their cause, and you find yourself thinking, well, who is right here? You know, like you kind of understand that you're supposed to side with the protagonist, but you can kind of see what they're dealing with.
One of the things that I mentioned commenting is that, and you use the word nuance and the grays. I think as you mature in life, not again, as anybody matures in life, you recognize that it's not black and white, that the world is very much gray. So what I said to you was that I think that you're looking at LOK, Legend of Korra, from the perspective of an adult. From somebody who's maturing, somebody who's going into adulthood, who's now seeing life for the complexity that it is. And I said, what would be interesting for you to go back and look at The Last Airbender and kind of see the nuances. Because they have to be. Because the reality is the show was also created, The Last Airbender, for children. I mean, it was on the children's network.
Yeah.
And there is just so much you could have dealt with. But that's the genius of it. You can go back and see that. I mean, I found something that drew me to it, so there had to be elements with me as a 30-plus-year-old adult to keep me going, besides the wonder of the story and the medieval.
Right.
And so there had to be themes in there, or it could be that, I mean, I'm just sharing some time with my son, and I see a little blood growing up.
My dad sat and watched all of The Last Airbender, too. It's one of those shows that 100% everyone that watches just gets into. I think it's cool that as much... There's so much trash on the popular media today, but with TV shows, music, and the like, but there are some things that everyone gets on board on that are just great and are just undeniable. Everyone enjoys it and sees it for the brilliance it is. I really think that show is one of those things.
It's like college. No matter what college you go to, it's about the people that are there.
Mm.
So when somebody goes into a movie or somebody watches a TV show, they're bringing their history into that viewing. So I think you probably understanding, and again, in the post that I've seen on Facebook, you're dealing with this. The people that you associate with are multicultural people, so obviously you're going to be drawn to that It's like, I bought a Hyundai Sonata. All of a sudden, I start seeing Hyundai Sonatas on the highway. They've already been there, you know what I mean? They're always there. But the fact that I'm driving it, I now say, whoa, there are a bunch of Hyundai Sonatas. So you going, I'm at NC State, living in a multicultural environment, I'm associating with a bunch of different people, different whatever. So obviously when you look at something, one, you're gonna see those things because they're part of your reality, part of the people that you deal with, so you pick those out. Does that make sense? You pick those out of the shows that you see.
That's definitely true. You can't get outside of yourself.
No way.
So you are going to just pick, you're gonna pick on things that you have ingested and have observed and experienced. But there's one thing I wanted to go back on before. I was saying that life is gray, but, and maybe you will disagree with me on this, but I wouldn't say it's gray in the way that most people think, where it's literally not black and white. I think black and white is still very much a thing. I just think that the aspects of our life that are gray are both positive and negative at the same time.
The yin and the yang,
they
exist all in the same space.
Mm-hmm.
They're there together inside that circle. And it is your experience in life that allows you to live and inhabit either the dark side or the light side of the reality. So, I mean, everything is there. I think people make these assertions about anything, but there is truth in lies. Lies have to come from, not lies, stereotypes have to come from some place of truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certain things you hear, they had to be real at some point because people keep repeating these things.
Yeah.
So everything exists inside the circle of life. It's just what we choose to sort of, what frequency, what channel we choose to tune into.
What do we focus on?
What do we focus on? That's all it is. So that the gray becomes, okay, I'm focused in on stats right now. I'm focused in on mass comm, I'm focused in on African-American studies. That's color. That's beautiful music. That's where my passion is. Everything else, you know, outside of that becomes kind of gray. It's not that it doesn't exist, because it's color for somebody else. It's beautiful music for somebody else.
Yeah.
But it becomes gray, but it's about the focus. And I think, and again, one of the reasons why I want to talk to you is that that's one of the most powerful things I recognize right around this time. It's about that focus. The fact that you're at the point where you have the capacity, you know you have the capacity to do anything you want. Because you've matriculated to a certain level of society. You've gone through high school, you've done extremely well through high school. You're probably doing extremely well through NC State.
Fairly well.
Log yourself up. What's your GPA at State?
Right now it's a 3.6. So
thank
not
you.
Bad.
Pat yourself on the back there. Pat yourself on the back. Let me give you a little bit. What? That's what I'm talking about. Because we don't celebrate people like you.
Yeah.
We don't celebrate people like you enough. We don't. And I want to give you the space, and I want to give other fellas that I think were like myself at that age who were like, you know, I'm going to college, I'm doing well, I'm not going to be in jail, I'm going to get a job, I don't know anybody in jail, I'm not part of that environment. Where's my story?
I've been thinking about it a lot lately because not only, you know, like, what do I do, like, what do I focus on, should I be patting myself on the back, but just, should I even be satisfied with what I've achieved at all? When you come from a fortunate background, I've gotten my education, I'm doing well, so I really can do anything. Is this path good. I feel like for some other people, depending on where they come from, what their circumstances are, they really only have one choice on what they can do to get to the place that they need to be. You know, their focus and drive is there. And I think the reason why you have a lot of quote unquote wayward wandering youth is because the fullness of life is open to them. They don't know what they should do. And the ones that are overwhelmed by it just decide to be apathetic instead or something. But with all these resources and everything available to me, it's like, well, a 3.6 is good, but I really could have a 4.0. What do I direct my time and attention to? Do I travel? Do I try to get this holistic experiential knowledge? Do I delve into my studies and become an intellectual? Do you seek relationships first? So I feel more like I'm someone that isn't getting enough out of all spaces in life instead of someone that should be celebrated because he's doing particularly well.
What you mentioned about sort of personality and ambition and the ability to act on life is stunted by the multiplicity of choices.
I think it is.
And I think that's a phenomena that is not only, it's particular to this time, I think, and particularly this time for young black men, because there are so many choices that people are like, well, as a black president, you have no more excuses now. Mm-hmm. The world is literally open up to you. What I think happens a lot today is that there are so many choices that once a person today starts going down one road, I mean, there are literally 1,000 different options that are positioned as being just as good.
Good, exactly.
You know, there used to be a time where people who were in positions of power, their power was so concentrated that it could make whatever they were selling, whatever they were advertising, seem as the best. Mm-hmm. We live in a time now where you guys are savvy enough to know that that's just bunk. That there is no the best.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of finding what works for you.
Yeah.
And then going down that road. But the problem is then there really are 10,000 the best.
You need lifetimes. You need lifetimes.
You need lifetimes to explore them all.
And the thing is, like, you know, like, we're human beings, you know, we're greedy. We want to experience it all. We don't want to miss out on the other opportunity. There's a great movie that is actually on Netflix right now called Mr. Nobody. It's kind of pseudoscience-y, it's kind of Dionysian, focused on like the emotional aspect of it, so it's not super scientific with it, but it gets into these thoughts. It's about this guy that can't make a decision because he knows that once he makes a decision, he can't go back, mm-hmm. and all those other opportunities are gone, but until he makes a decision, all possibilities are open to him. And I think that's what it is for everyone. Fear is the great immobilizer, at least for people like me, where it's just like, man, I don't know if I should do this because it might not end up being what I wanted, that I missed out on this other great thing. But you realize, well, if you stand and do nothing, you already know what your result's going to be. It's going to be definitely dissatisfied, so you might as well jump into something. That's something that college has taught me.
The fear, the mobilization in the mind is not that I'm going to fail at that choice, because I think there's the acceptance of, if I go down this road, failure is an option.
Option. Mm-hmm.
But the immobilization is the 1,000 other roads that I can go on.
The opportunity cost.
And that is, I think that is something that is a symptom of this sort of open culture. There's nothing wrong with it. This is a culture
we live in. It's a beautiful problem to have.
It's a wonderful problem to have, but it is a problem. And I don't think enough. I think there was a phrase that I heard in the 90s when I started thinking about this stuff was, well, they called the older heads the grays for obvious reasons. And I don't think it's something that the grays, the people who came of age in the 60s or 70s or even the 80s, really have a concept of, because what I think they see is the multiplicity of choices, and they go, man, if I had those choices when I was your age,
my dad.
It's a problem. It is still a problem for, I think, for this generation, and I think it's a problem that I don't think you guys can explain it too well to the grades, yeah. And it's a problem that they will never understand.
It's true, and it's even more complicated because now with the new generation of adults, they kind of take it to the outside extreme where it's just like, hey kids, you know, just do what you want, just feel your way, try anything, and it seems like no matter what you do, you're gonna end up with some sorts of problems. If you don't value this sense of commitment, you could go all the way in life, never fully investing yourself in anything. But it's such a tough thing to balance.
One of the things I want you to be able to talk through this, because these are the things that were in my head right around this time, you know, 21, 22, and these were the fears. It's about, I know I have the competency to simply make a choice and go about it. I feel confident in my abilities to do absolutely anything that I want. And it was that at that time, just naturally in my life. And what was funny, it was like the turn of the century, which in itself is like this burgeoning, it's like this new, so it was new even age. Multiplied. Oh, man. So you're at this, that's end of college, turn of the century, this new thing is coming into the air, and you feel this sort of vibe, and so anything is possible, absolutely anything is possible. And even in the last years of like, the last 8 years of Obama and the world getting to a reality that just didn't seem possible, you grew up in that. Mm-hmm. I mean, the world has to be as open as in beyond anything anybody before this generation could have possibly imagined.
No way. No way you could imagine that.
You know what I think it is? Is they're going, okay, I want the societal structure that was in place when I was a kid in the 60s, 70s, minus the awfulness of racism, sexism, all that stuff. But I want the family structure. I want the close-knit community. I want all that, but I want the multiplicity of choices that you kids have now. Mm-hmm. Not knowing that all those structures have more or less just, to me, and you might argue with this, decayed. Y'all better find a plan B. Community,
you're 1,000% right.
Religion,
you're right.
And unfortunately, the fact that the world was not as inclusive or as open to everybody's ideas and choices, in a sense, gave those kids that were growing up, I hate to use the word, but almost a glass ceiling on what they
think. Knew what they strive for.
So what you were talking about, they had that pointed focus. They knew they could only focus their point to a certain direction or to a certain place. So naturally they had that focus because it was because the world was so awful. Mm-hmm. And so now you have a kind of a more open world, more options, but then you don't have that. It's as if you need a barrier to focus yourself. You know what I mean?
You know, they talk about like the World War II-ish type era of people to be like the greatest generation. And you'll hear the old heads talking about how this generation is the worst and marked by laziness mostly, but I think a lot of it is fear as well, like we talked about, the two big immobilizers for people. But I feel like, oh man, I don't even know how to put this into words, but I think that what you said is definitely the case. I think that extraordinary, tough circumstances breed the most fantastic, amazing people because they have to step up to the plate.
They have no choice.
Yeah, and you know, that's kind of what, you know, a lot of people would say is happening with America right now. You know, you had a great generation of people that had to be great to survive. You know, you had people fighting. What most of us would agree were just wars. We're fighting the German Nazis because they're doing something bad, not this geopolitical stuff today. Like, there are core values, there's family, there's this hard work tradition. And when you reach a level of prosperity that comes from that, you have a generation that comes in that's not going to be their focus, because first of all, they already have most of everything that they need, and there's a wealth of options, so they might feel stagnated, and I feel like that might be the core of a lot of American problems. It's kind of with the cycle of life. It comes with coming in at a time that's really high, you're naturally going to have people that aren't striving as much, and we might have that dip, which will someday again bring a rise to a great group of Americans that maybe will bring us back up again.
I know Tom Brokaw did this, the book, The Greatest Generation. He did the tour, and people were talking about this probably 10 years ago. To me, The Greatest Generation were the people that fought civil rights in this country. Mm. The people who came after World War II, who came back and said, look, we're doing this all over the world. Why can't we do this here? Those people, to me, are the ones that transformed America.
Yeah.
All right, this wonderful, absolutely, Nazism had to go. It had to go. And the world had to come together and say that, and America was sort of leading that charge, and wonderful people got up and yes, we gotta get this done. But to be able to then come back to your own country and say, I mean, the hardest thing in the world at any age, especially young people now, is to be able to look in the mirror and to honestly evaluate yourself and say, I need to change.
Yeah.
I must get better. And there were people that did that. And there was no civil war, there was no some groups wanted it to be, some groups, actually, there was genocide in this country, there was terrorism.
Yeah.
There's Birmingham Church, there was terrorism in this country. Before Osama bin Laden, there was terrorism in this country. Nothing is new under the sun. People would have said the same thing about the people in the 60s that they're saying about you.
Yeah.
The gray beards from the World War II generation looked at the hippie kids going,
that's true.
You guys have all this openness. We're not fighting any wars. We have all these freedoms. We're living in the most prosperous society that human history has ever created. And all y'all want to do is smoke weed.
Yeah, that's so true.
All y'all want to do is smoke weed. Smoke weed and have sex with each other,
yeah.
And you have all these choices. Black people, you can do more. I mean, not a whole lot, but you can do a little bit more. And they signed a bill. You can do some things. You can vote now. 1960 what? 1960 who? 1960 who? 19. Hey, the Motor City is burning. That ain't right. 1960 what? 1960 who? 1960 what? 1960 who? 19. Hey, the Motor City is burning, y'all. That ain't right.
You know, with all the politically charged stuff that was going on, I wanted to listen to some of the black intellectuals of the past.
Get into it, man.
Yeah, and I was listening to, is it Alex Baldwin?
James Baldwin.
Oh my God.
You cannot. Oh man, that's my boy. I'm gonna have to just step out for a second. You said Alex.
Man,
it is James Baldwin.
Please forgive me for my
pollution. This is my boy. This is my man. Okay. I'm writing a book based on this man's impact on my life. You go on my YouTube.
I don't know the name, but I know the man.
James Baldwin.
But you know, I was loving his stuff, and he actually went to Oxford to have like this house debates where the house will be divided on an issue, and they'll get prominent speakers on either side of the issue to talk, and then the people of the Oxford house, these, I think they're undergraduate students, they vote on the issue. So they brought
James Baldwin,
and then they brought, what's his name? I don't remember his name either. It's like James something Buckley.
William Buckley,
that conservative guy. And they brought them together, and the question was, is American prosperity, with the way they phrased it at the time, reached at the expense of the Negro? And this is like during the 60s.
Oh, absolutely.
Obviously, but they posed that question, and the House that was siding with Buckley in their opening statement said, you know, we don't approve of all of the injustices that have happened to black people, that are happening to black people currently in America, but right now there are 35 black millionaires, and the average...
Today?
At that time. And the average earnings of a of the median earnings of a black man in the 60s there in America were equal to the average earnings of everyone in the UK at that time. And I just remember thinking at that time, like, man, that is crazy. That's astounding. And that there are people, first of all, people that were dealing with greater odds but were still striving at that time too. It just kind of puts in perspective all the stuff that we're struggling with right now. It's like, man, people were getting it done then. People have always been getting it done. Some folks say we gon' fight, 'cause this here thing just ain't right. There are people that are struggling, and it's, you know, are suffering a lot, and that shouldn't be discounted, but there are people that were still pushing through the barriers all along.
And around the time of your age, I was writing an essay on James Baldwin. I was writing on the fact that it was 40 years since Baldwin's heyday in the 60s. And I was trying to figure out how far had America come, how far had black consciousness come, how far had honest dialogue, not just about race, but about the nature of what it means to be a decent human being in America. For me, the question of race in America was not a question posed just simply to try to get black and white together. But what it did, it transformed the discourse about what it means to be an American. It questioned the Constitution. It questioned the First Amendment. It says, okay, well, all men are created equal. Well, really? Really? It's been 200 years, y'all. We're still here. We ain't voting. Women ain't doing, you know what I'm saying? So the question was not really black and white. The question was, what does America mean right now? How real is America? We just went out and we were fighting for these ideas of freedom, these ideals that we don't really hold dear on our own land. So it was like hypocrisy. It's really what it is, and that's what Baldwin is getting at. It's hypocrisy. It's hypocritical to go out and claim that the world is not living up to these creeds when you're not doing it at home. When you ain't doing it at home. So I think the power of Baldwin and the rawness of Baldwin was that he was able to shine a light on that. And he did it as good as anybody has ever done it. Incredibly eloquent, incredibly street smart, incredibly literate.
Ahead of his time, really.
Today, right, there would be 5 James Baldwins and they would all be on YouTube saying the same thing. It's just at that time, there were 3 channels. And I don't think people were ready at that time for the multiplicity or the nuance. Again, going back to the first thing to talk about, but the nuances of America. And I think the gatekeepers, the people who are controlling the media, television, people making decisions. And you'll hear a phrase, well, they're dumbing down to the lowest common denominator when they put these shows on because they don't want people to grow and elevate. There are people, elevated people. There are people like James Baldwin all over the country. But was television, newspaper ready to allow these people, to give them the voice, to give them the space to express their trueness, their reality? So maybe they would have inspired somebody in their neighborhood. Instead of a kid in California looking at James Baldwin, he could look at John Smith down the block in Compton and go, John Smith's closer to me. He's talking about stuff that's really relevant to me right now in my neighborhood, and I feel more of a guttural reaction to John Smith in Compton than I do to James Baldwin. Not taken away from the impact of James Baldwin because he transformed my life 40 years later. But today, if these discussions were happening, you'd be on YouTube and you'd be giving the speech.
No, you're 100% right.
So it's about, okay, how do I find the kid on YouTube who's now probably talking the same way James Baldwin did? How do I don't know how to find it because he's being crowded out by a bunch of bullshit.
And you know, now I'm remembering what the point I was making and even bringing up Baldwin and Buckley in the first place is that, you know, it's hard enough to even decipher the extent to which anything's happening in the past, and that's why I bring up those quotes. That's why it's so hard to parse out what's happening to us as black people, to the human race in general, in the present, because everything is so complicated and nuanced, and there's so much going on. But there is also, we're also getting flooded with a lot of information, and the thing that kind of sucks is when you give everyone a voice, you get a lot of really shoddy opinions. Like, as if we have to be 100% real, and how do you parse through that? I really like reading through YouTube comments, if I'm gonna be honest, it's pretty much
that like, is a dangerous, it's a dangerous path, road to
it's
go
like
down.
The bane of
dangerous,
the internet. It's
a
like,
dangerous
it's,
road to go down.
You get most of the time you're reading.
We get raunish.
Yeah, you get raunish. But sometimes you get some of the worst stuff that makes you just lose your faith in humanity and it's just like it's confusing you. It's just information overload. It's just causing dissension even, like within yourself because you can't make much out of it. But then you'll get people that will share their voice and they'll say something that's really insightful. I know that I post on threads like that sometimes. I think what's tricky is that people can't recognize their own biases and recognize what might be the motivated reasoning that they have when they bring things to the table. So when you're trying to make sense of the world by listening to others, it's hard to tell what you're taking from what they're bringing is like honest, true, and good, and what's been warped from their own perceptions of reality. I get people say that about me all the time when I talk with them because I like to try to have hard conversations. But it's crazy. But hey, you know, that's what makes life interesting, right? It's not so cut and dry. It's very ambiguous, and we
nuance. It's kind of like Legend of Korra. We gotta go back to it's a legend of Korra.
That's why, but that show deals with the human condition. That's what I'm saying. Like it was complicated. It's like you had a down.
I think
and out
all shows man. once you really start critically analyzing anything that you like, the thread that makes you like it so much is because it is about the human condition.
Yeah.
I got into science fiction in high school. In high school, and I used to be kind of scared. I mean, I wasn't a jock in your classical sense. I was the intellectual jock. Yeah. I was the smart kid that could really do well in sports. And it seemed that science fiction was the bane of the kids, you know, the nerdy kids It was those kids. So but then in high school, I like got into Star Trek. And I remember.
Yeah, Star Trek's awesome.
But not the old Star Trek. It was The Next Generation and Deep
My
Space
Dad
Nine.
My dad loves that show.
There was a point where I go, light bulb goes off. Wait a second. These are not about alien world. These are parts of the human condition.
Yeah.
Klingons, and I hate that they made them black, for God's sake. As I'm white, you know what I'm saying?
And
they made them black and butchered a forehead. You know what I'm saying? They made the most warlike people black. But that's neither here nor there. But the I'm like, that's our warlike, aggressive side, and the Vulcans is our intellectual side.
It's a beautiful
I can never
show.
Figure out who the hell the Romulans represented. but all these things, I'm going, okay, green people, well, we're real green, red, it's the different races, and you're going, of course, it's the 60s, this comes out of that generation, hippies, and people recognizing that we're different, and it's actually, to me, and again, I start thinking about races, it's a way of having a conversation about race and differences when you can't talk about it in life. And that's what I think.
So it's powerful.
That's why I like science fiction, because it fools and it allows people to have really good conversations about the nature of society without making it political. Okay. Science fiction does that very well, and that's one of the reasons I got into it. Like the Matrix is a philosophical, analytical. I mean, it is endemic of what it is to live. Of what
blew me away.
What was the reality? It was the reality of when I was your age around 2000. I'm like, that. And it was actually written. It was stolen from a black lady, but it was. I'm going. What's the opening salvo in the Matrix? It's the choice: the red pill or the blue pill. Yeah. What is the choice it's everything you just said. It's the choice, and then once you go deep down the rabbit hole, who am I thinking of here?
Alice in Wonderland.
Once you go down there, what do you see? But again, it's like what you said, you have to make the choice and act on it.
I heard this from someone and I honestly think I might agree. It might be too pessimistic. Maybe I'll
bring it.
But
bring it.
Maybe racial differences, the only way they can be solved is by way of an alien invasion. Now, I'm not gonna say anything. Let me go on. I'm gonna let you talk because I gotta go look at something right now. But I'm gonna let you talk. Okay, so the way I heard it was basically, you know, different factions and groups, they always warred with each other. Europeans warred with each other, Asian groups warred with each other. But, you know, as imperialism grew, African nations banded together, Asian groups banded together. So if we were thrown into a situation where aliens attacked and tried to subjugate us, how quickly would we no longer care about what race you are if you're just a human being trying to survive with me? It's kind of what the psychology people say. It's in-group, out-group. That's how we form our identity. So maybe that's what humankind cohesiveness is contingent upon. Maybe it's contingent upon hating someone that's not even us. We need someone else to hate.
Well, we need, I'm trying to figure out exactly what I want to say. There's truth in that thought. I mean, I remember Bill Pullman giving that speech. Today, we declare our independence. Let's go kill those alien mother. So I see it, but it's also, Gino, it's also the human condition is that it ain't gonna happen. So we gotta figure out a way, brother, of coexisting here on this planet, despite that. You know, despite the fact that there's not going to be an other. And there, it's kind of like the discussion on race, how it transformed American society, which in turn, at that point, transformed the world. Because what I like about the post-World War II generation of folks, especially specifically black folks from, let's say, 1950, 5 to 1970, and what it did is their actions, and exactly what you said. At this point in your life, you're recognizing that you have the capacity to do anything you want. So here's a generation that came out of World War II said, we won. We're the most prosperous society in the world. So now we have the potential to do anything. What do we choose to do? And they chose to make this country better. They chose to attack a problem that was here from the beginning of this country. This country was founded on these ideals that never existed in truth for anybody. And these people said, hell no. We are literally going to reframe the Constitution. We're going to literally remake America, not on paper, but indeed, they're going to make change in the everyday lives of people. And what that did, and why James Baldwin was called to Oxford, these people inspired transformative action all over the world. Not just... And when I say black people all over the world, I sort of count at that time just colonial empires that were ending. Mm-hmm. So the dark continent, Africa, India, in Asia, they looked at what was happening, what was being done by black people in America as an example of how to transform their own life. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying there were not white people here helping, you know, everybody was helping in this, but specifically the oppressed in South Africa, for example. There are pictures, you look back, there are pictures of Malcolm X, there are pictures of Martin Luther King, there are pictures of, this is what is possible. William F. Buckley makes the point that, well, the median income for black people. Well, a poor kid living in a hut in South Africa is going, how the hell am I going to get up to $10,000? Mm-hmm. And he can look at his brother in New York or Atlanta and say, it is possible. It is absolutely possible. So they... not only transformed American society, but they were the inspirations for transformative actions across the globe. So for Tom Brokaw to say that the greatest generation is the people that fought Nazism, yes. But the people who came back and said, well, you Nazi haters are treating other people around you like the Nazis treated everybody else. You're fucking hypocrites. Mm-hmm. And their sons and their daughters went about changing the society. And their actions transformed the world. It ended colonialism. It brought new ideas. It brought new governments into place. Now, some of those governments have become despotic and terrible. But the fact is, they made that change happen by their action. And again, going back to this age, 21, 22, where your intelligence and your experiences are telling you that you can. Mm-hmm. But it's about the choices that you make that know that you're not alone. There are historical examples. The roaring 20s, dancing around, drinking. People going, what the hell? What the hell are you kids doing? The 60s, hippies, long hair, weed. What the hell are you kids doing? The 1990s, generational, the millennials. You kids have all these choices. What the hell are you doing? It's the same thing. It's the same conversation. It's just the layers on top of it just keep expanding. And you guys are dealing with layers that are so freaking thick, so freaking multifaceted, but they are so 1080p clear that you can see everything. There was a point when the layers of reality were hidden to another generation. Why? Because the gatekeepers didn't want people to find out the truth. There was a point when, look man, John F. Kennedy was fucking people in the White House. Let's be real.
Yep.
Bill Clinton does it. Well, he's done it in the media spotlight. Mm-hmm. He's done it in the media spotlight.
Internet age.
You know what I'm saying? So the truth, like X-Files, the truth is out there and people have more access to it now. You go, should I really do this? If tomorrow some guy on YouTube is gonna come out and say, well, these people really are telling the truth and these are the real facts. The real facts were not coming out 40 years ago. Yeah. You wait 20 years to get the real facts. Right now a television show comes out, 2 minutes later there's a criticism of that show. So what do you believe? What do you believe? Tough. But you still have to act. In part two of my conversation with Gino, we talk about the multi-layered crystal clearness of his reality, where the truth is visible or not. We talk about education, college experience, talk about Nas, pop culture and the movies. We talk about what influences him and the choices that he makes based on those things. Come on back to Ubuntu Radio.